Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I gotta tell you, it's really kind of amazing at how on how our friends on the right react to people pushing back on the bad things they do. And I look at Susan Collins, who evidently Susan Collins wasn't happy that people had the audacity to put chalk on her sidewalk. Evidently, you know, some people have got some colorful chalk and out in front of her house wrote, "Susie, please, Mainers want the WHPA, which is the Women's Health Protection Act. Vote yes, clean up your mess." That seems pretty simple. She called the police and the Bangor police showed up and said, yeah, it was wonderfully drawn, multiple colors. But they also did not find that it was harassing or in any way threatening. No crime was committed. You know the most offensive part of this whole story? The Department of Public Works for the city of Bangor, Maine, showed up to clean her sidewalk. I find that the most offensive. Just my thoughts. Anyway, we're here to share some thoughts on just how bad things are. Because look, not only did the Department of Public Works come and clean her sidewalk, our Senate moved a piece of legislation to protect the Supreme Court justices who are holding up underground, showing that when they want to do something, oh boy, can they. And quickly, and bipartisanship all right there. Here to share some thoughts on our broken Supreme Court, I've asked our good friend Ian Millhiser to come talk with us. Ian is a senior correspondent over at Vox. He's also the author of the clairvoyant book, The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. Now, this was written a long time ago, and read it, not even bad enough. Ian, thanks for taking time for us.
It's good to be here. Thank you so much.
Let's start with the sidewalk. If someone chalked your sidewalk up, you think you can get the Department of Public Works to come out with a hose and spray off your sidewalk?
Yeah, I mean, if someone chalks my sidewalk, I wait for it to rain. Like, I mean, come on. It's the silliest thing in the world, but like, I think part of the story here is that conservative media has become so effective in pushing whatever alternative narrative Republicans want to push. I mean, how fast after the Roe opinion leaked did the narrative go from, oh my God, the Supreme Court's going to overrule Roe v. Wade, to how dare someone leak it, to how dare, like, maybe 30 people showed up outside of Justice Kavanaugh's house to hold a candle and chant. Like, I mean, maybe I would think that I was so privileged that I could call the police over something like that if I had a multi-billion-dollar media network telling me that the worst thing that could possibly happen is that someone might show up at my house and politely tell me not to do what I am doing.
Yeah, and they even asked, please, Susie, please, please. Mainers want you to protect the WHPA. They want you to vote for it. I don't. They said please. And look, I've been to Maine numerous times. People in Maine are very polite, and it was very well done. On top of it, I'm struggling now. These are the same people who said that, you know, the couple in Missouri coming out with the guns, that was okay. I guess I'm struggling. I'm struggling with where we are as a country, Ian.
No, I mean, struggling with where we are as a country is a great, you know, is I think the right place to be. I mean, you know, we're about to lose, or, you know, women are about to lose, you know, an essential human right. And this is going on at a time when the court has been dismantling the Voting Rights Act, you know, when they've been coming up with all sorts of creative ways to strike down maps that favor Democrats and uphold maps that favor Republicans. And, you know, at some point, like, you know, if we're going to have a fight about, if we're going to have a real political fight about abortion, where like lawmakers are fighting with live ammo and anything is on the table, I think that people who support the right to an abortion can win that fight. Like, the polls tell me that they should win that fight,
right?
Because there's, you know, according to some polls, you know, 2/3 or more support for keeping Roe. But you can only win a political fight if you have fair elections. And, you know, what worries me about this is that the court isn't just taking away substantive rights. They have been looking for all these ways to skew our elections so that, you know, the views of the people matter a whole lot less than they
should. I mean, to me, again, this is another example of just how far, how extreme our court system has gone away from, you know, what we the people want. But, you know, this has been going on for a while. And your book, you know, as I said, you know, it was clairvoyant. I mean, the reality is you wrote it well before a lot of this craziness happened, but, you know, it wasn't hard to predict. This was the direction that the Mitch McConnells of the world wanted the court to go in, taking away rights from women, in taking away rights from workers, from consumers, taking away rights from citizens. I mean, you think back, you know, we made money speech. We made corporations people. We stripped funding from unions. We're now going after women. We've screwed over workers with these, you know, these forced arbitration clauses, and consumers too. I mean, you know, go down the list of all the bad decisions in the last 20 years, 22 years, go back to 2000 with Sandra Day O'Connor and, you know, oh, we're going to harm George W. Bush by counting the votes. And we got a Supreme Court that's crazy.
Right. Yeah. And we've got a court that I think, you know, it would be one thing if we got this court through a fair and democratic process. You know, like, the thing that strikes me most about this moment is we have the first justice in American history to be nominated by a president who lost the popular vote and be confirmed by a block of senators who represent less than half the country was Neil Gorsuch, you know, Trump's first appointee. The second was his second appointee, Brett Kavanaugh. The third was his third appointee, Amy Coney Barrett. You know, the reason why Congress, you know, there's supposed to be a vote in the Senate soon on the Women's Health Protection Act, which is the bill to codify abortion rights. It's going to get 49 Democratic votes. It's going to go down 49 to 51. But those 49 senators represent something like 40 million more people than the 51 senators who are going to vote against it. So, like, again, I think these are fights that, like, that my team can win. You know, the team that supports abortion rights, the team that supports democracy. I think these are fights that we can win in a fair fight. But, like, I just wish we were having a fair fight right now.
Yeah, and this is where, you know, look, on a certain level, you have to give the McConnells and the conservative think tank movement and all of them the credit that they had a game plan. They followed through. They invested in it and they followed through. And we were the dupes who, well, didn't fight back at it enough.
Yeah. And what I hope doesn't happen, I mean, here I am, like, giving this gloom and doom story about how, like, the system is rigged. But what I hope doesn't happen is that, like, that people do not fall into despair. You know, I think it is easy to say, like, it's not fair that I've got to play on this unlevel playing field and that, you know, that I've got so many things lined up against me. I mean, first of all, if anyone's tried to unionize their employer, that's like what every unionization drive looks like is, you know, you've got every obstacle in front of you. And the only way that you get there is you say, well, I'm going to push through them. And I think that people have to have a similar attitude here. You know, you can win a fight, you can win a game when you've got to run uphill. You got to play harder than the other team.
Yep.
But, you know, the stakes are just so enormous that I hope that everyone understands, like, this next election is going to be crucial. And, you know, there isn't a path. I mean, we know that, you know, if you care about abortion rights, there are only 49 Democrats. There's only 49 votes in the Senate for the abortion rights bill. 49 isn't enough. But there's going to be an election. And if after that election there are 54 votes for it, you know, that is probably enough. That's probably enough to nuke the filibuster and move forward. So, you know, there's a certain amount of just like running in the face of pain that everyone's got to do right now. If there's going to be any ability to solve this problem.
No, you've got to put up a fight. And this is what I've been saying for a very long time. This is where I've been very critical of Democrats on a whole host of issues, that I don't see the urgency on, you know, name the issue that I would hope to see. And look, this, I don't see the urgency on this issue either that I thought I would see. Look, people have been outraged and there's, you know, Twitter's been all lit up and all this stuff. But look, things should be stopping. There should be nothing going on in the Senate at this moment other than talking about ensuring that people have the right to self-determination. Families should have the right to privacy. Because look, they're... Listen to Marsha Blackburn. Listen to Mike Braun. Listen to what the other side is saying. They're not just going to stop with Roe. They're going to go after all of the other decisions. And you know, you and I have talked about this for years, where the ultimate goal is to take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I think there's a lot of big fights coming. I mean, there's, you know, first of all, if you read the draft opinion from Alito that was leaked, his reasoning in that opinion is identical to the reasoning in his Obergefell dissent, the marriage equality case. You know, in both cases, what he said is that, like, the only rights that aren't specifically mentioned in the Constitution that are protected are rights that are grounded in history and tradition. And he claimed that neither abortion nor the right to marry a person of the same sex are grounded in history and tradition. And so, like, I mean, I don't know if Alito has the votes yet, but I know where he wants to go next. You know, I know that in the Hobby Lobby case, you know, your definition of what constitutes an abortion and my definition of what constitutes an abortion is not the same as like the definition that a lot of people have. You know, in the Hobby Lobby case, we thought of that as a contraception case. It was about employers who didn't want to provide contraception in their, when their employer provided health plans. But the reason why the employers in that case said they didn't want to do it is because they thought that, like, many forms of birth control are in fact forms of abortion. You know, they, I can get into the science there, but I'm not a doctor. So, like, I don't want to be like Sam Alito and opine on women's health when I don't know enough about it. But, like, you know, that's what they believe. And so if you believe that an IUD is abortion and the court says that you can now ban abortions, you know, what do you think that lawmaker is going to do? You know, if you believe that birth control pills are an abortion and this court says you can ban abortion, you're going to try to ban birth control pills. And so I think that there's a lot of fights coming that, like, I mean, not just that I didn't think we'd have to have in this country, I didn't think that any developed country would have to have them in the 21st century.
Yeah, but here again, you talk to some of these people and they want to take us back to those moments. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Ian Millhiser. Ian's a senior correspondent over at Vox. He's also the author of the book, The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. We'll get links out on social media. You can pick up a copy of that. Well worth the read. And one of those things where, had you read it a couple years back, maybe 10, you'd have gone, no, we're not going here. Well, we're here and worse. But, you know, Ian, this is in talking about the leaked memo, and there are a lot of people who are going, you know, who could have done it? It was the liberals who did it. No, it was the conservatives who did it. I have people, and I happen to believe it was probably, you know, a certain Supreme Court justice's wife possibly has a history of doing that in the past. I'm told, does it matter who leaked it, do you think?
I mean, it's interesting who leaked it. I mean, it says something about court's intrigue. It says something about, like, if it was a liberal clerk, to what extent liberals are losing faith with the court. If it was a conservative clerk, it says something about, like, how, like, greedy the conservatives are to get everything that they can have and get it now. But, like, ultimately, like, everything is a sideshow compared to what that opinion actually says. I mean, I think it is interesting that the court has sprung a leak. I would like to know who the leaker is. Like, yeah, I mean, everyone loves palace intrigue. It's fun. But in this case, the palace intrigue is about people losing a basic human right. And so, you know, again, I want to know who the leaker is, but I just want to make sure that we understand that all of this, you know, are people protesting in front of someone's house? Does Susan Collins have chalk on her sidewalk? All of that is secondary to the question of whether or not the right to an abortion is still going to exist.
And now the question becomes, because, you know, as I was, you know, talking about the Susan Collins thing, and as, you know, yesterday we were talking about, you know, Alito and, you know, having to go underground into the secret bunker, and now you've got the bipartisan, you know, Secret Police Act for Supreme Court justices, or whatever they're calling that. My thoughts come back to, when do we start outlawing the ability to redress our government for grievances? When do we stop being able to protest in public? When does that begin to happen? Because, again, you know, a lot of people look at this abortion issue and go, I'm past my childbearing years, which, me as a 55-year-old white guy, I am well past my childbearing years. So it doesn't really matter to me personally. Now, I've got two daughters, matters very much, what their lives could be, their ability to determine the course of their existence. So it means something to me in that vein, but I think a lot of people, maybe not as urgent. But I come back to this point of, you know, this is just the beginning. This is going to get a lot worse, I think, because, well, these folks have a religious kind of bent, this kind of zealotry that I don't think this country really understands.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've covered the Federalist Society for, you know, maybe a decade now, you know, the conservative group that picked all of Trump's judges, or many of Trump's judges, and all of his justices, I believe. And, like, the thing that strikes me, like, the first time I covered a Federalist Society event, like, I felt like I was in a room with a bunch of medieval viscounts, like, you know, people who, like, you know, felt a certain entitlement to rule. And this was during the Obama administration. And, you know, there was just this overarching sense that, like, this guy in the White House wasn't legitimate because he's not the guy who's supposed to rule. We're the guys who are supposed to rule. And I mean, they can be very polite, they can be very genteel, they're often very, very smart people who can construct very, very well put together legal arguments, and, like, arguing against them is a daunting task. But fundamentally, I mean, you know, I felt the same energy that I would have felt in a room of, like, literal aristocrats. This sense that, like, you know, something has somehow gone wrong if they're not in charge. And, you know, if you think that way and you control an institution that literally has the power to veto any law and to rewrite any other law, then, you know, I mean, that is probably not going to end well for people who care about democracy.
No. And, you know, one of the things that gets me is I have a lot of my friends who voted for Trump and vote for Republicans because they believe, and this is the weird part of this, and this is the kind of strange place we are in this country in, that they believe that the Republicans are taking on the kind of elitism and the kind of aristocrats that you've laid out, that they believe that they're fighting against those folks, not actually being them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think the Republican Party has done a good job of, like, I mean, this is one reason why I think that they do so much governance by judiciary, because, like, you know, so, like, I have a whole chapter in my book about this, about forced arbitration, how, like, your boss, or, like, really any company you do business with, your cell phone company, your bank, or whatever, can force you to sign away your right to sue them. And, like, instead go to this private arbiter who, like, often is rigged in favor of the corporation. And, like, there's no constituency through for that. Like, Republicans couldn't get a bill through Congress that enacts that kind of a regime. But if you do it on the Supreme Court, no one notices. Like, people talk about this. People a lot of times be like, well, what are you talking about? Like, that sounds like, why haven't I heard about that? And the reason why is because, like, the court operates in closed doors. It hands down, like, 60-page essays that are full of legalese that, you know, unless you're a lawyer, it's often hard to understand what they say. And you know, and you have to, like, be a particular kind of lawyer who knows that subject matter to know what the implications are. And so Donald Trump can, like, you know, get out there and do photo ops where he's sitting at a big rig or where he's, you know, walking through a factory, and he can, like, have a certain kind of personal charisma that, you know, that appeals to people who are afraid of, you know, elites, you know, taking over their lives. But then he puts Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court. He puts Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. I mean, Neil Gorsuch is, like, I believe his mother was a cabinet, was a member of Ronald Reagan's cabinet. And I believe he is the heir to, like, a ski wear fortune. Like, if you want an elite, there's an elite. You know, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh both went to the same elite all boys prep school in Washington, D.C. You know, Amy Coney Barrett's father was a oil and gas attorney in Louisiana. Like, I mean, if you don't like being governed by elites, you know, I would think that the heir to a ski wear fortune is probably not, it's probably not the kind of person you want to be governed by.
Yeah. Last line of questioning I got for you, because, you know, the court, I've got a bunch of friends are going, this is why we need to add justices to the court. Like Biden can just snap his fingers and that'll happen, especially given how broken our Senate is. Is there a way forward outside of the elections? Because, look, I keep saying, look, you got to vote. While we still have the ability to vote, we've still out-procreated their money. We've, for the time being, still have the ability to vote. Go do it. Make sure you're registered. Make sure you know where your polling place is. Make sure you plan to get there. Make sure you get there on the right days. Do that so we get more people in to overturn some of this horrible. But is it possible to go and add justices, or is that a pipe dream?
I mean, it is possible. So the Constitution says there shall be a Supreme Court. It does not say how many people will sit on the Supreme Court. That is entirely up to Congress. I think the first Supreme Court had 6 members. I think it has gone as low as 5, and it has gone as high as 10. And so, you know, all that it takes is a simple act of Congress, you know, majority of the House, majority of the Senate, president's signature, and we could have 13 or 15 seats, and then President Biden could fill all of them. But if you want that to happen, and I mean, like, after the Roe opinion leak, there's actually a poll which showed that a plurality of Americans do want that to happen. You know, there are not the votes in Congress for that right now. There are not the votes in Congress for the Women's Health Protection Act, which is the, you know, abortion rights bill right now. And so you can give up, or you can say, well, we need more votes, so let's go out and elect the people we need so we have enough votes. I would not let the fact, I mean, this is the problem that literally anyone who has ever done politics ever has had, is that when you don't have the votes to get the outcome you want, you got to go win some elections and then you have the votes. I mean, this isn't a new problem. It's just that the stakes are very high right now.
No, this is that moment. But Ian, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the great work over there at Vox, and I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Ian Millhiser, he's a senior correspondent there at Vox. Make sure you check out his work. We'll get links out. Also, his book, The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. I highly suggest that. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss an episode. Make sure you subscribe, share, like, all of that stuff. Back after this.